and welcome once again to EWTN's Bookmark. I'm Doug Keck, your host. This is a special bookmark. It's always special when we're joined by Father Joseph Mary Wolfe, MFVA. He's here to talk to us about another book from Mother Angelica. This is Mother Angelica's Keys to the Interior Life, proudly published, of course, by EWTN Publishing, naturally available through the EWTN Religious Catalog, EWTNRC.com, for all things Catholic, especially all things Mother Angelica. Always yes. Great to be with you, my friend.
Always good to talk about Mother and some of her insights.
Right, absolutely. Know? This is a ratings winner for me between Mother Angelica and you. this is going to be big time. Mother Angelica's Keys to the Interior Life. Now, this came out of some highlights of several of our on-air programs. Mm-hmm. What's the importance of the interior life for the average person at home?
Yes, and you know, I want to begin with just the cover here. Mm-hmm. Because we've got, you know, the nuns, this is in their hallway in their monastery, and they have the Stations of the Cross there. And I couldn't help but think as I'm reading this that Mother would always give the sisters lessons, mm-hmm. and that was important to her. You know, she had the network business to do, but there was always the lesson she would give the sisters, right. because she knew the importance of them growing in the interior life. Well, she did for the friars too. Mm-hmm. Not every day, but we would have a weekly lesson with Mother.
Right. And she used to do that with the network too for many.
She
many
would
years,
for the employees
I
as well.
I showed up and she stopped doing it. I don't know if there's correlation there or not.
That's right. So I still remember that, you know, those lessons. But she was often speaking about the interior life, mm-hmm. because that's really the essential thing, isn't it? If we're getting the interior life, our life with God right, mm-hmm. then everything else is going to follow. So I think when people read this, it's going to be like sitting down with Mother and she's going to teach you about the interior life and how to grow.
Like you were one of the sisters being taught maybe mm-hmm. at a lesson.
Exactly.
Now the contents of the book there, part one is Keys to Prayer, and then part two is Keys to the Spiritual Life. And in part one, the one that initially attracted me was dryness in prayer, because I always remember mm-hmm. Mother talking a little bit about
right.
that. But one of the things that was surprising was the chapter on expectancy. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't quite understand where she was going with that.
Right. So expectancy, she's tying it together with hope. She mm-hmm. says like a hand in a glove sort of feeling that I would put it as you have something to look forward to. Right? And so she begins from you're in the womb. Imagine mm-hmm. you're in the womb of your mother. And that modern science shows that children are affected by the attention or lack of it mm-hmm. of their mother, whether mother wanted them or not, and even the sounds around that they can perceive, mm-hmm. they sense a certain thing, whether they are wanted or unwanted, loved or not loved. Mm-hmm. But then she goes through every stage of life, and that it's love really that enables that stage to look forward with mm-hmm. hope. Mm-hmm. And so she even talks about teenagers, and that we can say is even more relevant today, that they're ripe for despair mm-hmm. because we're not giving them anything to look forward to. But when we have the Lord, there's always an expectant hope because He's always at work. He's with us.
Right.
He's bringing good out of the struggles that we have. He's turning it to good and to our maturity. Right. And so that's where expectancy comes in. And even when you get older, right? Mother said, we can often bemoan the fact, I can't do what I used to do, can't do what I used to do. And so we're just kind of down right. in the dumps. I wish I could do that. But she says, you know, our expectancy is even greater for what is to come. Mm. But also, we have more freedom now. Mm. We've learned some things along the way. We can handle difficulties and troubles more peacefully.
Right. She said, our young people today are prime candidates for despair, and there's a tremendous amount of suicide today because they've lost expectancy. It's interesting, mm-hmm. too, because you can think about how many years ago this was.
Right.
And as much as it was a problem, it's exponentially worse now,
right.
post-COVID.
Mm-hmm. Because a life without God, like she says, it just destroys our hope.
Right.
Because if this is all that you have and you're looking at the news every day and you're saying, wow, things are really a mess. Mm-hmm. What's the future got to hold? But if you have God with you, then you know that He's always at work. Mm-hmm. He's always doing something. And even in the dryness that we might experience, God's there.
Right.
He's working. He's doing something. And Mother understood that in her own dryness experience, which, as you pointed out before the show, she said it was 40 years.
Yeah, I had no idea.
I didn't either, really.
Right.
And But it's in that she came to realize that she needed to love God for God alone. Mm-hmm. It wasn't because of the consolation.
Not for what she was getting from him.
Right.
Right. Interesting. I want you to know how important expectancy is, because it can either make or break you. She said, goes on to say, you know, sometimes when you speak to your children, you can ruin their expectancy. Mm. We can say pretty belittling things in jest. Your kid spills water, etc. goes on. It was interesting, too, because I could see that in some ways, did you get the sense she was also talking about her own childhood here?
Yes, and I think she even brings that up, you right, know, that yeah. she had a troubled childhood, but also right. that she said, I thank God that mm-hmm. he entered, you know, into that. And she came to know him and to find his peace and her joy, his joy. You know, she brings up a sad story in there of this mother who says, well, this is my daughter.
Right, right.
And, you know, she's a mistake. I didn't really want her. Right. A little girl's head, right. you know, and mother said, you should be ashamed of saying that. And she went to the little girl and said, God loves you, mm-hmm. you know? And so if we don't experience that in our natural life, and there are many elements in Mother Angelica's own right. life where she experienced that, her father's rejection, his whole just disconnecting from the whole family, we can right. know it, God fills in the gaps.
Right. Yes, yeah. She says, you see, the thing we destroy in each other so quickly is hope, as you were saying. Mm-hmm. When you let someone feel unloved, when you let them feel they're a big mistake, and that's right. where that story comes in, mm-hmm. where you say to yourself, my Lord, even if you thought that, how could you say that
I know.
To that person?
Yeah, to destroy hope, you know, just the comments that we can make to people, especially parents to their children, because their children are looking for affirmation.
Right.
They're looking for encouragement. They're wanting to be shown the way to flourish. And then when you just beat them down with some remark, you know, it can just really destroy right. their hope.
And she also makes the point in here about the ideas. So I want to tell parents, you need to strive for stability in your family. And of course, mm-hmm. what are we dealing with? We're dealing with an implosion of the family, basically,
right.
out there. I mean, it's not only are the family falling apart, but so many young people don't even consider getting married anymore.
Yeah, and that she mentions that love and sacrifice are connected. Mm-hmm. And the reason so many marriages are falling apart is because they've grown cold, because there's not the element of sacrifice. It's quid pro quo. I do this, you give me that. Well, if I give four and you only give me one back, then hey, right. I'm out of here, right?
Right?
But if you have the sense that, okay, I'm called to sacrifice to prove my love, then our own hearts are going to grow.
Right.
And it's also going to be right. something that will hold a marriage together.
Well, I remember one of the things you learned early on in Marriage Encounter, marriage isn't 50-50, it's 100-100,
right.
if not 120 and 120. Mm-hmm. And you have to go in with that idea. One of her chapters was imploring God's mercy on the world. You know, so many people mm-hmm. have an image of Mother, you know, kind of telling tough tales and stuff. But I always think in sense of mercy, and her talking about how the first time I really saw anything to do with the whole divine mercy was really through EWTN.
Really, she was one of the instruments to help right. promote that devotion.
Right.
When I first got here in 85, that was one of the first things the sisters recorded in the chapel, when we didn't have cameras up there yet. So we had to run the cables all the way up to the chapel and record that with Father George.
Was Father George Kosicki, right?
Kosicki, yes.
Yeah, Father George Kosicki.
So
right.
they sang that, and that aired for many years.
Right.
And he was just a holy priest who promoted the divine mercy.
Yeah, absolutely. He was a bazillion, but he was stationed
That's right.
up in Stockbridge. And mm-hmm. he had been a really big, big promoter of it. She says, our concept of justice is very severe. So when I punish somebody, it's really with a kind of vengeance. But God doesn't do that. Every time God punishes, it's out of love. And again, that mm-hmm. runs totally counter to the, you know, Mother's kind of severe.
Right. And how she talks about how he manifests his love in a variety of ways. And so when we have some difficulty or trouble in our life, it could be the chastising hand of God, but it's not a chastisement to destroy a person. It's rather to bring them back. You know, Sister Michael, she's now 73 years
yeah. wow.
in religious vows. And I still keep in touch with her a little mm-hmm. bit on emails. She's 93 years old.
Wow.
And so she's one of the original sisters. And she talked about how Mother had a yelling theology. She said that when you weren't getting it, she would have to use yelling theology. And it was like throwing cold water on your face. It just gets your attention that, oh, maybe I do need to change, you mm-hmm. know? And so God doesn't, you know, wreck his rage upon us. It's rather that we may have some suffering, because sin always is accompanied by suffering in some way.
Mm-hmm. Though initially, usually it starts off feeling very good.
Right. But the long term, as Mother brings out
falls
here,
apart, right?
It falls apart.
Right.
And it doesn't turn out well.
Right.
And that's because God doesn't want us to keep going down that path of self-destruction.
Right. She says, you and I know, my friends, that so many of us never really go back to God until we're in a lot of trouble. You just don't think of God. It's as if we say to the Lord, look, I'll handle this as long as everything's okay. What am I need? I'll call you.
Right, right. But really, we are called to a relationship. She talks about this, too, in the expectancy. This is one of the things as we get older that can mature, and we can have an expectancy in our life of prayer. So as maybe before, initially we're asking for things, we're asking for this, we're asking for that.
Right.
But then as we get older, it's developed, it's grown, and now it's a heart-to-heart relationship that we have with God. And there's an expectation about, well, what's God going to do today? Mm-hmm. It's not just like, well, I have to give up what I used to do when I was young. But it's God's up to something today.
And that's where you get that chapter kind of living in the present moment as well, which Mother, I always remember, was a central theme of Mother certainly conveying to all of us. She also said, did you ever wonder why some of your prayers are not answered? This is under mercy. Besides the fact that it may not be the will of God, some of our prayers are not answered because we do not love.
Yes, like if we loved God and loved others, oftentimes we're going to see that happen. We're going to see the fulfillment of what we really deeply desire. And she even says there that there are some prayers that she thanks God he didn't answer the way that she had envisioned. Because if you love God, then you're saying, okay, I know that you have my good in mind here. And if things don't work out like I would like them to work out, then I know that you've got a better plan, that your wisdom doesn't make any mistakes. That your power can do all things, and that you are all good. So I can trust you.
Right. And I thought this was interesting. She said, we offend the Father so much by ingratitude for his gift of Jesus and his son's mother, Mary. It just makes my heart ache when I see so many people putting so much money and time and labor into such terrible literature against Our Lady, against the Church, against the Pope. And then she goes on to say something. She says, love one another and do not condemn. Then she has this line. How do we think we're going to face God? And that's the one question that we all need to ask ourselves, because sometimes you see people out there doing things who still are running around saying, I'm a Catholic, but never found an abortion they didn't like or some other ridiculousness going on. And you think, you're going to have to face the Lord someday.
Right, and she talks about the reality of peer pressure or just the pressure of the world, right, to conform to this. So don't just hold to your Catholic teaching, you know, unflinchingly, but conform yourself to the world. Well, we're not going to be with the world, with the group, when we stand before God. We're going to be alone. And how have we lived out our conscience, how God has called us to? She said, stand firm sometimes. Right. Sometimes we have to stand firm.
Right, because the accusation is going to be your sin.
Right.
That's what it's going to be. In trusting in the present moment, she writes, you know, if you knew you were going to die in a day or two and you wanted to leave your family something very important, then you would measure your words, you would be very careful what you said, and you would get it in the most important things because you don't have time for superficial things.
Right. I love her insight into John 14 through 17, which a few of these chapters talks about.
Right.
So this is his last discourse at the Last Supper. And so he's worked miracles, he's raised the dead, he's done all these things, he's taught them in the Sermon on the Mount. But now it's like he's going to be going to his death and then his glorious resurrection. And it's like he's encapsulating the essentials of growing in the spiritual life, of your communion with me, with him. I now call you friends. That it's in love as I have loved you. You love me if you keep my commandments.
Everybody forgets that part.
That's right.
They get the first part.
That's right.
They forget about that stipulation that's also in there that, you know, if you're not doing that, then there's something wrong with what you think you're doing.
Just like the rich young man, what's the first thing the Lord says to him? Keep the commandments. Which ones? So he lifts off commandments. That's the foundation, right? That's the moral underpinning that you're striving to live sin-free, you know, not embracing sin, giving up sin. We all struggle, as Mother brings out, you know, but we have to be striving for that. And without that moral underpinning, we're not going to have a spiritual life. I mean, the Lord can enter into that and break through that, but we have to have this resolve and this striving to overcome.
Right. As she says here, I have to trust that if I've done what I should do in the eyes of God, no matter who thinks I'm wrong, I must go on trusting He will take care and give us light. In your life and mine, things don't always make sense. When something in my life happens that just doesn't make any sense, I take it as coming from God.
Yeah. That's when we really have to trust. And I sometimes will counsel people when I'm talking to them that I said, be honest about the feelings you're feeling. Why is this happening? Why is this going on? But I tell them you should always conclude with an act of trust. But I trust you because you love me. And I know that whatever you permit or ordain in my life is only because of your love. And I can trust you, and I do trust you.
Right. Well, if Teresa Avila can complain when she fell in the mud or whatever about the Lord having so few friends because how He treats His friends,
right.
No wonder He has so few. I don't think there's anything wrong with us complaining about
right.
it, as long as we're ultimately not walking away from God because
exactly.
of that complaint.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing you mentioned a little bit earlier, and right in the beginning of the book, and we talked a little bit about the dryness, she talks about the phenomenon is that Jesus draws us to a fire, which is His love, but we feel cold.
Mm.
It's an interesting insight. She talks about the whole idea of suffering, the idea that prayer seems to be dead. This is how I feel.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever talk to someone and you know he's not listening? You can tell because he answers the questions you never asked.
Mm.
She says that dryness is a blessing, not a problem. So often in life, we take something that's a blessing and we think it's a curse. We do that with suffering. We take suffering as a curse, something that is of no value, and that's a mistake.
That Jesus said He would be with us. And so she talked about one banquet that she had gone to, and there was some celebrity who was leading up. She's going to be the last speaker. And the previous speakers were there, and they were all applauding her. She's going to get some kind of an award. And she just kind of had this vision in her mind and her heart that this is what the Lord's doing. You know, that ultimately He's leading us to this banquet of heaven. And it's going to be this rejoicing, right? And that He's walking with us, and He's bringing us there. So whether it's dryness in prayer, and I always remember what Father Groeschel said, a lot of prayer is just showing up.
right.
could say it. I'm here, Lord, I'm waiting, I'm thirsting, I'm longing, but I'm here.
Right.
And I'm dry, and dry as a bone, but I'm trusting in You and I'm here.
Do you think sometimes a part of the reason that people don't do that is because they're afraid that if they open themselves up to God, might ask them to do something they're afraid they don't want to do?
Yeah, that's unfortunate, you know, because we're afraid He might ask us something that I really don't want to do. But He only asks us what He's already planted in our hearts, a particular mission and work that's going to bring us the greatest satisfaction. So you could have stayed, you know, in the television world up in New York. You'd probably have done very well because you're gifted in that area. But the Lord called you to come down here, right?
I hope he did.
But how much greater satisfaction you must have interiorly because of that, and how many souls you affected because of that. And that has to be a great consolation, I think, for you and I. I came from Iowa to Alabama, didn't know a soul here. But at the end of our lives, that's going to be a great consolation that, Lord, I strove to do Your will.
Right.
I hope that souls were brought closer to You through this mission that You implanted in my heart and called me to.
Right. She also says in the dryness section, so often we take divine love and compare it with human love and feel that divine love is the same. That's your first mistake. What's different, do you think, what she was saying?
Divine love is always faithful, of course. It never disappoints us, and it always wants our greatest good. And so even on a human level, for sometimes there can be an unconditional love that isn't calling us higher. But that's not God's love.
Right.
He doesn't let us remain where we are.
Right.
Even if it's painful. Because He knows that ultimately it's going to lead us to something greater.
Right.
We're not called to be comfortable, but to be great, Pope Benedict said.
Right, and she even uses an example here of a mountain climber. She talks about starting up the valley, etc., and how you can breathe easily, but the air is not pure down here. As you begin to climb, you get out of breath. The higher you get, the harder it is. So you've got to take some off your pack, some out of your pack, and you've got to put on an oxygen tank because the air is too pure. It can be painful and very fatiguing. The higher you climb into the purity of air, the harder it is. So the spiritual life and dryness are exactly the same principle. The more you go up the mountain of God, for the finite creatures you are, to be able to climb to the divine, you need to be able to breathe the same kind of air. Something has got to happen to you before you climb to this point. She goes on to say, and this climb is very lonely. Why? Because a lot of people will fall away. There are very few who will reach the top.
Yes, because he's calling us to love him just for himself and to really love like he loves. So he loves us even if there's no return, even if we ignore him, even if we turn around, away from him. God cannot love us more. He already loves us. And Mother brings that out, you know, as the Father loves me, so I love you, Jesus said. And we should ask the Lord to say, what does that mean? What does that mean? And just to reflect upon that. So when we're experiencing dryness, there's no consolation, there's no really comfort maybe we feel in prayer, or having to move forward with faith purely, more purely, trust more abandonedly, and just to love him because he's worthy to be loved.
And like you said, instead of unpacking and except the stripping away maybe of the, you know, the accoutrements, the accretions you're carrying with you that are holding you back from making the climb.
Right. So you're having to let go, detach more and more. Detachment is a big thing in the spiritual life, right? And John of the Cross uses that illustration of a bird with a tiny string, keeping it from flying higher. So it's that detachment. And sometimes life itself detaches us. You know, we get older. We're having to let go of certain things. And that's why you often find people, as they get older, the spiritual life becomes more important. Because you do realize, I've only got a limited time here on this earth. And I need to focus on what really matters and what endures. And that's a good thing.
Right. In the second section, Keys to the Spiritual Life, was there any particular chapters that struck you?
Yeah, I think she covered John 14 through 17 and how she talks about that reflection upon how Jesus loves us as the Father loves him. Wow. It just ponder that for a moment, you know, what does that mean? That he loves us that profoundly, that deeply. So I think that, and how this was really 14 through 17, it's kind of like he teaches us the basics of this, the Christian spiritual life, the basis of how we are to grow, how to be holy, how to come to that transforming union.
Right.
And that when one advances in the spiritual life, it's not no longer just the two loving, but they become one. And that's true in the spiritual life too, and the masters like Teresa of Avila, right? Talking about that transforming union that happens.
Right, and that's love one another as I have loved you is one of the chapters. Another one is praying in the name of Jesus, and also the idea of the peace of Jesus. Did you see that in her?
Definitely, and you know, and I said this in the article that was done in this book as well.
It was in the Register.
It was in the Register recently. That Mother taught us how to have peace. And really it comes from this deep trust. God's here in the present moment. He's turning it to good, even the difficult things in our life. And you could see it in her. When she would talk, there was a peace. She could laugh at herself. She could laugh, you know, at her foibles. She could laugh at, you know, the things that would happen in the network sometimes. She didn't take herself too seriously. She could have that peace and that freedom because she trusted God. Seems crazy, you know, to 12 nuns, you know, beginning a network. Is, as she said on 60 Minutes episode, she said, is by far the most ridiculous thing you could ever think of. But she could have peace even in that. Didn't mean there weren't troubles or tears, But deep down, she had that joy, and she made the distinction between happiness and joy.
Well, that's a really good point, is the idea that sometimes, a lot of times, people have the kind of once saved, always saved thing. I'm going to do this, mm-hmm. and then God loves me, and then everything is supposed to be fine in my life. And if it's not, there's something wrong with my spiritual life, rather than realizing that's part of life. Mm-hmm. And the real thing is, as Mother would say, is that to realize regardless of the slings and arrows, mm-hmm. as long as I'm following the path that God has laid out for me, the lamp unto my feet, mm-hmm. I will come through this.
Yes, that he's going to use it all.
Right.
And the tragedies, and she even mentioned a contemporary tragedy that happened with this airplane crash, and the families are waiting there, and this airplane crashes, and everybody's lost. How do you understand that?
Right.
You know, there's a part of mystery in God's providence, mm-hmm. but you can still have a deep down joy even while you're weeping exteriorly, because you know you have this expectancy. Right. That ultimately my family and my friends are going to have life with him forever.
Very good. Well, thank you so much for your insights, yes. Father Joseph. Always a pleasure. Mother's latest book, Mother Angelica's Keys to the Interior Life, again published by EW10 Publishing, available through our catalog as always. I'm Doug Keck. This has been an EW10 Bookmark Show. Thanks for joining us, and check that book out if you would. See you next time.